Hi, everybody. My name is Hub Arkish, and Pro Football Weekly, the news magazine, was launched on September 17, 1967, by my dad, Arthur Arkish. It was the first publication devoted exclusively to the NFL. 9 years later, I went to work with him and my brothers, but just 2.5 years after I started, my dad died suddenly of a massive heart attack at the age of 53, and I took over the business. For the next 40 years, PFW was the most read and respected publication covering the NFL. We invented independent draft information analysis with the legendary Joel Buxbaum more than 10 years before ESPN or anyone else even covered the draft. We created The Way We Hear It and delivered award-winning insiders information in print and on our website. We launched Pro Football Weekly Radio, syndicated nationally throughout the U.S., and in 1986, along with my partner Jim Kizios, we launched Pro Football Weekly TV on NBC. 37 years later, the show has won multiple awards, airing in over 90% of the country, and we've been renewed again for 2024. It'll be our 28th season. Today, we launch our Pro Football Weekly TV podcast. My co-hosts are also my TV co-hosts, Dan Hampton and Dave Wanstead. Dan, of course, is a legendary Chicago Bears defensive lineman who played 12 seasons with the team, earning 4 trips to the Pro Bowl, including selections at both defensive end and defensive tackle, and he's inducted into the NFL and college football halls of fame. Dave was Jimmy Johnson's first hire as defensive coordinator when Johnson took over as head coach of the Cowboys. He went on to spend 6 seasons as the head coach of the Bears and then 4.5 seasons as the head coach of the Miami Dolphins and then 6 seasons as head coach of the University of Pittsburgh after leaving the NFL. Our plan for our podcast is to bring you everything you want to know about the NFL every week, including all the news, scoops, and rumors before they happen, and we will have regular special guests as well. We truly hope you'll enjoy listening and watching and know we'll have a great time bringing it to you. Hi, everybody. I'm Hub Arkish, and along with former Chicago Bears, Miami Dolphins head coach Dave Wanstead, and NFL and NCAA football Hall of Famer Dan Hampton, it's my pleasure to welcome you all to this week's edition of our Pro Football Weekly TV podcast. Scouting Combine is behind us now, and this week, on Wednesday, free agency kicked off. So we're into the free agent market already, and the trade market is now open for the 2024 season. So as a result, we're going to take a week or two off from the draft that is still over a month and a half away and focus this week on what to expect this year in free agency. But before we start, guys, let's get our biggest take on what we learned from the Combine. I can start with we knew going into Indianapolis that this year's draft class is loaded at quarterback, wide receiver, offensive tackle. And what I learned for certain is that while we don't know yet whether the Chicago Bears are going to use the number one pick or trade it, USC quarterback Caleb Williams is going to be the first player chosen. There doesn't seem to be any question about that. And the only other possible candidate is Ohio State wide receiver Marvin Harrison Jr. It also seems pretty clear to me that Drake May and Jaden Daniels they'll be the other two of the top 4 players chosen along with Williams and of course, the receiver at one. But it's the only sure thing I'd bet on is Williams going number one. Now, Dave, we'll start with you as we usually do. What do you feel was the biggest story or what did you learn the most about this year's draft from what went on in Indianapolis this past week?
Well, Hub, you mentioned quarterbacks, offensive line, and receivers. The thing that got my attention was I'm talking to guys that are not overly excited about defensive players, and that kind of took me back. All the projections that you see, most of them don't have a defensive player going in the top 10. And I start asking, well, what about these pass rushers and defensive linemen? That's usually where it starts. And they made it real clear to me. There is not a Will Anderson from Alabama in this year's draft. You got the Dallas Turner kid, but he has some flaws. You got Latu from UCLA. You got Verse from Florida State. You got Chop Robinson from Penn State. These are all really good players. They're going to all line up and play next year in the NFL. But no one seems to say, that's the guy that I want. The same thing with defensive tackles. You got the big kid from Florida State, Fisk. Jenkins, 6'5", kid. And then they're the Illinois kid. They're talking about Johnny Newton, about him being, a top 20 pick in the draft. He's 6'3", good player. But again, he's not the guy that you say, hey, he's a top 5 pick. And the same thing with corners. You go to corners and you say, who do you like? And they mentioned Alabama, what's the corner at Alabama. They mentioned the quarterback Wiggins who ran so fast at Clemson. They talk about Mitchell, the corner that was second fastest, the guy from Toledo. But no one's saying he's the Witherspoon from last year that went with the 5th pick to Seattle. So I guess to answer your question, Hub, I guess it's just I'm not hearing the strong buzz for a defensive player going in the top five or top 10 at this point?
Well, the only one that I think could possibly jump up, and Jared Verse, and you mentioned him, Coach. Jared Verse is a very, very interesting prospect in my mind, in the sense that, you know, not everybody's going to be thinking offense. So they're going to, out of necessity, they're going to reach. And maybe Jared Verse would be one of those projects that drives him into the top 10. But the one thing I was, and I don't want to say amazed with, besides the fact that Caleb Williams made sure everybody knew he was a prima donna, was the fact that the precision of all the quarterbacks and their execution of throwing the different routes. And we used to talk about this, Coach, and I don't know if you know what the burst out is, Hub, but Buddy Ryan used to talk about the burst out, and he would say there's only a handful of quarterbacks in the league that we have to be prepared to defend the burst out. And the burst out is when you have a receiver basically running, oh, maybe a 16, 17 yard slant, and then they turn and diagonally go back to the out of bounds pylon. And that is a 43, 44 yard pass by the quarterback. And it has to be on a frozen rope, and it has to be with excellent timing. And I watched, you know, J.J. McCarthy threw it, Bo Nix threw it, all of the second-tier quarterbacks that you may have thought they didn't possess that arm strength, they were throwing it. And that's the thing that kind of jumped out at me.
You know, guys, I'm going to throw in something here that wasn't on the script. I don't think it'll be too hard, but I'm curious for your thoughts as a coach and a Hall of Fame player. You know, we talk about where these guys are at right now and what you've got in them. And I just wonder, with Caleb Williams, he's going to be the number one player chosen. We just don't know who's going to end up with that pick. But I was taken aback by the amount of things that came from him and his dad and mom at the combine, coming out of the combine, just about so much off-the-field stuff about him. There are so many things that come up, and I'm not blaming him. It's not his fault. It's whoever's doing the analysis on this. But you know, Dave, as a coach who has to handle all this and then get your opinion as somebody who's got to live with these guys in the locker room and play with them, I just worry about that stuff. I don't want my number one overall pick in the draft, that huge asset, to be as focused on, you know, trying to run the show and be in charge and have things his way. And I'm not saying Williams is a bad guy, but there's just so much going on with him besides the play on the field that would really bother me if I was getting ready to use the number one overall pick on him.
Yeah, I think it's legit. I really do. I used to always tell our players and coaches, let's keep the main thing the main thing. And the main thing with him, Hub, I think what you're talking about is let's talk about football. You know, everybody in Chicago was saying, well, he came across very well. He did. He's a sharp guy. He knows what to say. This guy. Yeah. But, you know, what bothered me the most is I wanted him to hear, and this is probably for Bear fans, might feel this emotion that I felt a little bit more than other teams. I wanted to hear him say, the Bears had the first pick in the draft, and I want to go to Chicago, and I want to be the Bears quarterback. I never heard that. He was complimentary about Chicago and the Bears. But then supposedly in the interview, he asked Ryan Poles or Matt Eberflus, you know, they said, do you have any questions for us? And his question was, do you guys really want to win? I mean, are you kidding me? I kind of agree with you, Hub, that if I'm Ryan Poles, I want to spend a lot more time with this guy. Absolutely.
You know, Dan, let me just throw in there, because Dave just focused on exactly what got me thinking about this in Indianapolis the other day when I was standing 6 feet away from him and I heard him say, the most important thing is I want to be with a bunch of guys who want to win. Now, I have a question for you, Dan. Did you ever play with a guy at any time in 12 or 13 years who didn't want to win? I mean, that's not a hard question to answer. That seems to me like it should be an automatic for anybody drafted in the NFL.
Well, okay, a couple of things. And Coach, you're exactly right. There is a whiff of the prima donna. It's all about him. and all of those things that every coach, you know, loathes and doesn't want to have to deal with. But all that being said, in an abstract way, you got to think, where was he? He played his last 2 years in Hollywood. He watched LeBron be the star, make everything about him. And I kind of think that in a big picture way, he's kind of, you know, hey, this is what I'm seeing from, you know, mega stars. And if I want to be a mega star, this is what I have to project. But all that being said, you're right, Hub. If you got to tell somebody you want to win, that means you are basically, you know, going with some kind of a mantra that somebody told you to say. And I know Lou Holtz used to make, you know, a comment. He said, hey, all my players say they want to win. I want to ask them, can you live with losing? Can you live with losing? And see, I couldn't. When I got to Chicago, I was like, it was, you know, we're going to beat the drums and expose everyone we have to make sure we find the winners that want to be here when we put, you know, the team together. And you don't know, and you will never know until you get down the road with him. But you got to just think, hey, he's a byproduct of Hollywood right now. And he's kind of saying a few things that maybe people have told him it's important to say. And if I was Ryan Poles, I would have said, yeah, we're trying to win. We're trying to identify whether you're the guy that's going to help us. That would have been what I would have told him.
Like it. I like it.
You know, the other thing that really makes this interesting, if you think about it, is that, you know, here's, and again, I love that Williams wants to win and he's talking about it. But of the top six quarterbacks, all these guys we've been focused on for the last year and a half, who won the fewest games in college last year? Caleb Williams. So, and I'm not blaming him. I mean, it's obviously the team's situation. There was a lot of things going on at USC, but he literally won the fewest games this past year. So we're going to be continuing to talk about this going on. But as I said, we're going to get away from the draft for a week or two, get into free agency, which kicked off this week. Before we do, one other question, though, and you know, Dan, you actually threw this out to me the other day, so I'm going to let you set it up. But, you know, you look at last year, and you've got 14 playoff teams. They're not all going back to the playoffs. So what are you looking for in trying to decide which teams are least likely to compete again this year, and how much of it has to do with what they accomplished during the offseason right now and in the next week or two?
I remember vividly going into the playoffs, and only one time did we essentially say, we're going to close the deal next year, and we did it, okay? A couple of more years, we were the best team in football, had the best record home, and it didn't work out. But we never brought the same team back the following August to training camp. There's, you know, and now it's a lot different. So in a big picture way, if you look at it, I'm looking at the Buffalo Bills. The Buffalo Bills, they've got a lot of question marks. And in the AFC, they've been a contender. And we know that last year they got to 6-6, and then they had to win 6 out of 7 to kind of get back into the mix. And then, yeah, obviously it didn't work out again. Since then, I saw this week they're going to release a bunch of really, really good players. Micah Hyde, Jordan Poyer, and Tre'Davious White in their secondary. All three of those guys probably – will not be a part of this year's, you know, campaign. On offense, they've lost a couple of offensive linemen. The Bears traded for Ryan Bates. But Mitch Morse, their center, who I thought was a fine player, a fine, you know, part of that offense, they've opted to cut him and move on. So there's a lot of questions, not only – yeah, and we talked about it last year, Coach, on Pro Football Weekly. I said, how many times – this was October, November. I said, to me, it looks like a team, a very talented team that is cool with standing around and waiting for your superstar quarterback, Josh Allen, waiting for Josh Allen to make the plays to win the game. And a lot of times you get, and you know what, we saw it a lot with Kansas City, and you see it, you know, here and there. Peyton Manning, he used to be, you know, one of those guys that everybody expected him to be the difference maker. But Peyton did a great job of coalescing with not only the head coach, but keeping the roster motivated to where he knew, you know, if I got to go make plays to win the game, like you always say, coach, I'm looking at a quarterback that can score twice in the last 5 minutes if I got to have it. Well, to me, Buffalo was one of those teams living on the knife's edge last year. Now with a lot of the subtractions I'm watching here, I think they're going to struggle this year.
Dave, which team of those playoff teams from this year do you think is going to have the hardest time getting back again this year?
You know, and people think I'm crazy, but I like the Cowboys a lot in that division. I'm anxious to see what the Eagles do. And I'll tell you, they got two new coordinators, obviously Fletcher Cox, Graham. The relationship, I'm convinced that there was something going on between Jalen Hurts and A.J. Brown. That thing went cold at the end of the year. And my focus is not on any of those players necessarily. I want to see the head coach, Nick Sirianni. I think he got exposed some last year, you know, with the Eagles, because he lost both coordinators the year before when they went to the Super Bowl. One went to the Colts, one went to Arizona. And, you know, he has a new coordinator. He lets him go halfway through the season, promotes Matt Patricia. I mean, Philadelphia was really a disappointing team. And I think it starts with the head coach. So I'll be curious to see if they can get their mojo back. They're an older football team. Kelsey's retiring. Fletcher Cox is probably gone. They were the backbone of that team. And Jalen Hurts, I have no idea what happened to him. No idea what happened to him last year. I just can't believe that he played and turned the ball over and made mistakes like he did down the stretch. And on the sidelines, I just didn't see that energy. I didn't see the energy of, God, get me back in there. So I don't know. I just don't have a good vibe on the Eagles and then Cleveland. I think they did on the other hand, I think Stefanski, the head coach, did a fabulous job. You know, bringing Flacco back and you lose your best running back and you lose. They had more guys hurt and he did a great job, but they got four defensive linemen that are free agents. They got two linebackers that are free agent. They got Kareem Hunt that's a free agent. Obviously, one of them being Desarius Smith. You know, Flacco's gone. I mean, I don't know how they're going to. And they don't have a quarterback. Let's face it. From week one, you don't want Joe Flacco being your starting quarterback. He was perfect last year. Deshaun Watson hasn't proven to be the guy. So I see Cleveland and Philadelphia being AFC and NFC teams that I have some real concerns about.
How, before we go, an NFC team I'm looking at, it has to be Tampa Bay. They've got a lot of decisions, but the one thing that a lot of people may be mistaken in is overvaluing what Baker Mayfield was able to do because of the great job of his coordinator, Dave Canales. As you know, Canales, he's moved on. He's the head coach now in Carolina. How much can you expect out of Baker without Canales? And I got to tell you, when the Bears played them, I think week three, boy, he had an exquisite game plan. And those guys, they executed it flawlessly. So I think Tampa Bay may be another team that got into the playoffs this year, but it may be uphill for them in 24.
Well, Dan, I'm going to get Dave mad at me here because I agree with you on Tampa Bay. They were my NFC team. I just think there's too many questions. I think Baker Mayfield is going to get more money from somebody else than the Bucs are willing to give him. And so I don't know what they're doing at quarterback, and they've got a lot of other things they've got to fix. But on the defensive side, Dave, I'm sorry about this. It's Pittsburgh that bothers me. I just look at that team from last year, and statistically, on both sides of the ball, they struggled. There was nothing special for them to lean on. And now we talk about these questions at the quarterback position, and we don't know what they're going to do. They're supposedly one of the teams that could be heavy into the market for Justin Fields in a trade. They could be looking to, you know, move up and draft one. They could take another year with Pickett. I don't know what they're going to do, but I think they've got a lot to work on as they try and get ready for next season. And now, guys, one more thing we got to sneak in. I promise we're finally going to get to free agency. But, you know, Dave, the owners' meetings are coming up in 3 weeks. And one of the things we know is going to happen at those owners' meetings is they're going to be talking about some rules changes in a couple areas. And the one for sure is in the kicking game. There's been too many problems with it. They've already got some thoughts on it. And I know you know better than I do, probably than Dan too, as far as what they're looking at. So fill us in, if you can, on what you think is going to happen at those meetings in a few weeks to the kicking rules.
Yeah, there's three things that they're talking about. One is not a kicking rule, Hub. I'm going to get into that, but the meat of it is, the one is the, they're called the hip roll tackle. And they're probably going to outlaw that. And they're going to use the same ruling or same decision as far as the official, when's he going to call it, just like they do right now on the horse collar. So they're going to kind of, they want to put those two into the same category and say, you can tackle the guy, but if you roll on his legs, and I don't know how they're going to officiate this, but this is one thing that they're looking at. A lot of complaints from the players about that. A lot of key guys, obviously, last year had big-time injuries because of it. The second rule, now we'll get into the kicking real quick. They're looking at changing the onside kick rule. And what they're proposing is a team cannot kick an onside kick unless, one, your team is behind, number two, you notify the other team, and number three, it's got to be in the fourth quarter. And they're talking about it getting, why is this? They're trying to cut down on injuries. They say the surprise onside kick, there's been injuries. I don't have the numbers, but that's a change that they are proposing. Onside kick, fourth quarter only. Notify the other team, we're going to do it, and you got to be behind to try one. The big rule change is the kickoff, and this is technical. Now, got to understand, it goes back to the Super Bowl. There were 12 kickoffs last year in the Super Bowl. 11 of them were kicked out of the end zone. One of them, they took a knee. So as much as they want to decrease injuries, the special teams coaches in the NFL are fighting to keep the excitement of the game. And guess what? The owners love that. The owners want fan excitement. So what they're talking about doing, and we'll add some drawings for our listeners here to follow this, they're talking about putting the ball on the 35-yard line, okay, backed up, but they're going to move the kickoff coverage team, now think about this, up to the 40, across the 50 to the 40. And they're going to put the kickoff return team at the 35. So they're going to be 5 yards apart. Okay? When the guy kicks the ball off, and there's some no more fair catch on a kickoff. So two things are going to happen. No more fair catch and no donning the ball in the end zone. No taking a knee in the end zone. You either run that thing out, or if the ball is kicked through the end zone and you don't touch it, the team gets the ball at the 20. So they're almost penalizing you. If it's kicked out of bounds or if it's kicked through the end zone, a short kick out of bounds, they get it at the 40. So you're going to be penalized as a kickoff team if you're going to just kick the ball through. Now, with that being said, they estimate last year in the National Football League was the lowest kickoff return percentage in the history of the game. Only 20% of the game kicks were returned. 20, that's it. Zero in the Super Bowl. So that either get rid of that aspect of the game or you make changes. The league is making changes, and here's what they're going to do. The ball's got to go to at least the 20-yard line. And the ball has to be returned unless you boot it on the ground all the way through the end zone. So what everyone's going to be doing is the coverage team's going to be at the 40. They're going to be trying to kick that thing to the 10 or the 5. And now the blockers are right in your face. There won't be the collisions. It's going to be more screening. And I asked the guy that did it last year in the USFL did this, and he told me that his average kickoff return was at 25 yard lines. So the coverage unit was running 20 yards as compared to 30 or 40 or 50 yards. And the whole thing, and there's more details and specific things, but the gist of it is, how can we cut back on injuries and still keep excitement in the game? Make the ball be returned. And this is what they're proposing, how they're going to tweak it. I don't know, but in the USFL, when they did this, 85% of the kickoffs were returned. In the NFL, 20% were returned. So the ball's going to be returned. It's going to be returned. And the injury should be less. That's what they're proposing.
See that? See, and Hub, that makes me think you're trying to achieve two different objectives. The kick, you know, the injuries are where huge men are you know, at a high rate of speed banging into each other. It won't be very long before smart special team coaches start finding, you know, little hidden, you know, techniques and different things to do. If you're forcing more kickoff returns, you're gonna see more injuries. It's just, I think it's a fait accompli. It's, if you're gonna have guys returning the kicks, there's going to be a lot of injuries.
You know, Dan, it's funny you said that, because that's exactly what I've been thinking since listening to Dave. Is the most important thing is protecting the players. You want to keep everybody healthy. There's no question about that. But I don't see how doing away with the fair catch is going to make things safer. It's going to make it more dangerous. I think you're going to have more injuries because now you're forcing contact on every single kick, as opposed to there hasn't been that much contact on these kicks. So I'd like to know what they're thinking about, you know, in going that direction. But obviously it makes sense to do what they can to try and protect the players as much as they can.
This is coming from the special teams coaches, because otherwise they're going to get eliminated. Right? Let's eliminate the kickoff, eliminate the punt return. And they're going to be, so they, the special teams coaches, with the support of John Harbaugh, took this to the owners. That's what I was told, why it's on the table for a vote.
Well, guys, we're going to learn a lot more about it in a couple of weeks, and we will keep everybody up to speed on it as more develops. Right now, though, again, with the combine behind us, and free agency kicked off this past Wednesday, teams can actually be trying to make deals, talking to players, talking to agents right now. And, you know, we know the strength of the draft is a quarterback, wide receiver, offensive tackle, maybe an edge rusher, even though, as Dave was saying a little while ago, it's not as good as it's been in past years. But the free agency talent isn't quite as deep as it's been in recent seasons. And there is some depth in the spots, the same places where the draft is strong. In free agency, there's at least four or five quarterbacks who could end up signing and becoming starters this year. There's a load of talent at wide receivers, some older wide receivers, but a load of talent. There are some special running backs, a lot of running backs. And we know that that's been a difficult position the last couple of years, both in the draft and free agency. And then the ERs and defensive tackles, a lot of talent there. Now, we don't know how many of these players have been tagged yet. A lot of them have gotten the various kinds of franchise tags. But, you know, Dave, there are six veteran quarterbacks, we've already talked a bit about them, available, all of whom could end up as starters this year, and which ones will have a huge impact on where and when the rookie quarterbacks get drafted. You know, you look at Kirk Cousins, Baker Mayfield, Jacoby Brissett, Ryan Tannehill, Russell Wilson, Gardner Minshew, all of these guys could end up starting somewhere this year. They're all free agents, and, you know, I guess, you know, I'll come back to you, Dave. I don't know which ones of those, or if there's somebody I haven't mentioned who interests you the most.
Well, I had the ruptured Achilles myself, and it takes a year, even though, and Kirk's Cousins is 36 years old. The good news is he doesn't run, you know, I mean, but you still, one of the reasons Dan Marino gave it up, it wasn't his arm. He could probably still throw harder than half these quarterbacks out here now, but he had a ruptured Achilles. He was wearing a brace on his foot. His knees went bad. And a lot of people underestimate the importance of your legs in throwing the football. So, you know, I hear this, Cousins, everybody wants, and he had a Pro Bowl, last couple of years were Pro Bowl years for Kirk. They really were. But I would say, boy, you know, you got an older guy, and if it's a new head coach and you're trying to build something for tomorrow, buyer beware. I really believe that. And I don't know, you know, anytime, and then I'll be quiet. Anytime in any position, my experience, you are going to get the best effort out of a player that his contract is up. You know, if they can't play hard every play and lay it on the line and be prepared when they are in a contract year, they never will if you give them a lot of money. So, you know, I think you got to look at these guys, and Russell Wilson is an intriguing one to me. He's going to get his money. And this guy is a winner. I think he had a good year. People don't want to hear me say that, but I really believe he did, under circumstances where the head coach didn't like him, didn't want him. I don't know what the reason was. But I'll tell you what, if you're a team that's close, if you're the Cleveland Browns and you got that defense and you get a good running back, I would love to see Russell Wilson at Cleveland with a good team and see with a good running game and a great defense, not good, and see what Russell Wilson could do. I think he's got a chip on his shoulder and he plays big.
You know, Dan, we've mentioned six guys who've all been starters in the NFL, but you have to add this to it. Kirk Cousins, 36 years old. Ryan Tannehill, 36 years old. Russell Wilson, 35 years old. Then you go to the other half of the group. You've got Jacoby Brissett is 31. You've got Gardner Minshew at 28. You got Baker Mayfield at 29. You know, if anybody's going to get a multi-year big money deal, it's going to be one of those three younger guys. But any one of these guys could conceivably give you that 1 year. You know, Dave mentioned Russell Wilson. I mean, this guy has played at a very high level for a number of years in the NFL. Obviously, Kirk Cousins has. You know, even Ryan Tannehill has had his moments. So, you know, it's not just about the quarterbacks in this draft, Dan. It's which one of these is going to be the veteran who is the difference maker, who not only gets the deal he wants this year, but has two, three, four more good years in him.
Yeah, I think you could also put Sam Howell, who obviously was with the Washington franchise the last couple of years. You know, it's funny. You know, you look at Geno Smith 2 years ago, and Mike Sandoz does a great job of evaluating the quarterback play. And he has, you know, the rating system of a set of tiers. And Geno Smith made the largest jump of anyone in history, jumping from tier five to tier three. And had a terrific year where, you know, I think, you know, he had 34 touchdowns and only 9 interceptions. And then last year, it fell apart. So, you know, I think all of these teams hoping for, you know, fool's gold as far as finding and signing a perfect free agent fix at quarterback. And your point about Russell Wilson, you know, think about this. Kirk Cousins, we were talking at the beginning of the show. What has Kirk Cousins ever won? Is he a winner? Have you ever heard? I don't remember him winning anything. You know, they had a pretty good year 2 years ago in Minnesota. They didn't win anything. So is he a winner? Well, we know Russell Wilson, he has been a winner. Would that mean that he would have priority as far as someone you would covet and think you could live with for a year or three? I don't know. But I got to tell you, sometimes you just got to say these guys are, you know, the old saying, if somebody is showing you who they are, you got to believe them. And I don't know if that pool that we're talking about is going to, you know, change a team's direction single-handedly. But I'll tell you this, you know, it's funny. Think about Sean Payton down in New Orleans. He had kind of went with, you know, he had the running game with the kid from BYU, and then he had Winston, and he had, it was kind of like a grab back, and you would think that having a bona fide, you know, four-tool quarterback like Russell Wilson would have been a really good fit, a happy marriage, but it wasn't. So it'll be interesting to see how all of these guys, where they go, what they wind up, you know, being asked to do this year.
You know, guys, there are some very good wide receivers and running backs available in free agency, too. But what's different about those two groups and the quarterbacks is with the quarterbacks, at the end of your 20s, you get to 30, you're just coming into your prime. You're probably looking at some of your best years coming. Whereas with the running backs and the wide receivers, 27, 28, 29, coaches, you know, not coaches so much as GMs and scouts are already giving up on you. They're afraid you're getting near the end. And you look at the wide receivers in the free agency this year in particular, some very good football players, Marquise Brown, you know, Gabe Davis, Calvin Ridley, Darnell Mooney, Odell Beckham. But these guys are all in their mid to late 20s. Beckham is 31 years old. They're all number twos. None of them are number ones. But what's become a trend in the NFL in the last couple of years is the really good playoff teams all have two number ones or a great one and a two that make their passing game so effective. And that's why a lot of these guys, I think, are going to be chased. There's no question about that. You know, I think Gabe Davis is probably you know the biggest name in this group because he's only 25 years old. And that's just the top five or six. There are a lot of wide receivers that are going to get paid this year, but I think these, Dan, they're probably going to be a little shorter term, a little lower money deals. They may get 1 or 2 years where they can get 10, 13 million for the year, but there aren't going to be any $40, $50 million wide receiver contracts this year.
The one thing, and again, you know, the league every year kind of waxes and wanes. What's important, you know, the running game, running backs, all that. It wasn't as important. And then this and that. Think about how Kansas City has kind of changed the value system of wide receivers. They won a Super Bowl with essentially nondescript wide receivers. You know, some guys that, you know, would not be considered, you know, number one wide receiver. So it'll be interesting to see how all of this kind of changes, morphs, and projects as the free agency market shakes out, and then, of course, in the draft. But there's no doubt in Chicago, we saw last year the value, the baseline value of a bona fide great number one wide receiver in DJ Moore. And even when your quarterback struggles, even when the offense is out of sync, they can make a big difference. So, you know, a lot of these guys, you're talking about Beckham. I mean, you know, he's been in more towns than the Mississippi River. So we'll find out where they wind up. But I think everybody's looking at it like if you protect a good quarterback, the receiver's value. Maybe everybody would love to have, you know, Ja'Marr Chase. But if you don't, you can still win.
You know, Dave, it's interesting to hear Dan rattle off those names. And I think about some of these players and you know, how good they've been. I mean, Odell Beckham, I'm going to take a chance on him if I can get him for a year or two just because he's Odell Beckham. And I watched him play this year. You look at Calvin Ridley. You know, you look at Marquise Valdes-Scantling. These are guys who have been really good NFL receivers. But they're not true number ones anymore. And yet, in today's NFL, the number two is almost as important as the number one. So I look for a lot of activity on these wide receivers in free agency.
Yeah, I think so. And you know, earlier you mentioned the running back. People, take a look at Detroit. That's what I would say. You know, Josh Jacobs 2 years ago led the NFL in rushing. And last year, I don't know what they were doing the early part of the season. But then when Antonio Pierce took over, he says, we're going back to get an identity. And he started running the ball, and Josh Jacobs came alive again. You know, there's a lot of backs out there that I think, you know, maybe it's the new offensive coordinator mentality, you know, and the passing league and all that crap. But I don't see it. I mean, I think you look at the teams that win down the stretch. Baltimore was in the top five in running the football. Obviously, Detroit. Look at Christian McCaffrey. So there's backs out there. If a good running back is a free agent and he's healthy and he can help you, I would say go sign one of these running backs.
You know, and you look at the running backs that are going to be available, it's a really good list. Saquon Barkley, yeah. Josh yes. Jacobs, Derrick Henry, DeAndre Swift, Tony Pollard, Austin Eckler, Ezekiel Elliott. We go on and on. Every one of these guys is a 1,000-yard rusher, and none of them, Derrick Henry is 30 years old. The rest of them, Barkley's 27, Pollard's 27. You got Eckler's 29 years old. You know, it is old at the position. But if you're a team that just needs a big-time back for a year or two and you can pay them a little bit more for a year or two, I think, again, there's going to be some real activity here. And the one, Dave, that interests me the most is Saquon Barkley because he probably has had the best career of that group that I just rattled off. I didn't realize he's still only 27 years old. You know, yeah. I mean, he has been injured a lot the last few years, and that's going to worry you. But I'll tell you what, you look at some of these guys who showed up this year after signing free agency deals and had big years, this could be the most interesting position of all in free agency, I think.
Yeah, they waste no time in giving $10 million to a backup quarterback, and I understand the importance of that. These guys at $10, $11 million, you're going to get Saquon Barkley. This is a little bit, I disagree with that whole philosophy, obviously, and I've been a running back guy, but I know the importance by watching those teams and watching the games.
Think about this, Coach. Arthur Smith, he's now the offensive coordinator for your Pittsburgh Steelers.
Yep.
Why wouldn't Derrick Henry, and obviously they've got a couple of backs that they probably think, you know, have futures, but Derrick Henry and Arthur Smith back together again, you know, like they were in Tennessee, that could be interesting. But the one that jumps out, nobody really talks, you mentioned him, is Austin Eckler. All he does is touch the ball 20, 25 times a game and break defenses down. I mean, he is a very, very, you know, interesting guy that could change almost any offense that he has brought in and added to.
You know, guys, one more position, and then we're going to be out of time, I'm afraid, for this week. But you talk about the defensive line in free agency. It is loaded. Chris Jones, Jonathan Greenard, Daniel Hunter, Christian Wilkins, Bryce Huff. It goes on and on. Chase Young. I didn't know Chase Young was only 25 years old. You know, you've got Jadeveon Clowney. He's 31 years old. But at the defensive line, Dan, you know, we know these guys can play their best football into their early mid-30s, even their mid-30s. And there's going to be the problem here is that we haven't locked up who's gotten various kinds of franchise tags hung on them yet. So some of these guys aren't going to move. But this is where I think the biggest money is going to be spent, because I just rattled off 6 or 7 Pro Bowl type players on the defensive line who are a lot of them are going to be available at free agency.
Well, when you look at who won the Super Bowl, yeah, it's Kansas City and, yeah, Patrick Mahomes. But who was the second most important player on that roster in the playoffs? In my mind, it was you know, Big Jones, the defensive tackle. And how could they let him walk? I don't know how Miami has not had a defensive lineman of note in a long time, many years. And Christian Wilkins, in the mid part of the season, he was unblockable. I don't know how they could let him, you know, walk, but he would be a huge addition to anyone. And Daniel Hunter, he was there, you know, even with Hunter Smith on, you know, he was going to go in the Hall of Fame for the Vikings. Daniel Hunter was their best defender this year in my mind. He caused a lot of havoc, and I don't know how Minnesota thinks they can be a contender, can get better if you let those great players walk. I expect both those guys to be franchise tagged.
You know, Dave, it's interesting because I talked to a handful of guys in Indianapolis who said that they think that Chris Jones is going to move. They're hearing that he was unhappy that he didn't get his $100 million deal at the end of last season. And you know, he's not against possibly staying with the Chiefs and maybe winning more Super Bowls, but he is seriously going to listen to what other teams are willing to offer before he decides whether he's going back to Kansas City or not.
Yeah, I think the Chiefs will let him do it. You know, I mean, the guy's got some age. You know, let's face it. I talked earlier about these guys that played big. Last year, he played big for the tag. He came back on a one-year deal, knew he was in a contract year again. He played big this year. God bless him. The guy's a great player, major part in Kansas City winning a Super Bowl. But you're at his age and the whole ball wax, I don't know. Unless you're a contender, you know, I don't see a team jumping out there and giving him a bunch of money. I really don't.
Well, he may not get paid a lot, but I'll tell you what, I think there's going to be interest in him. And then, Dan, the one other guy, DeAndre Swift, every time I see an Eagles game, I hear his name over and over. He's only 25 years old. You know, to get to his first open contract at only 25, he hasn't been as consistent as you would like, but he's another one who could be the next big thing at the position, who could be switching teams as that roster appears like maybe it's starting to get turned over.
No, I think he will probably sign somewhere. And he won't, I don't think he will command the numbers that he is expecting, but obviously, you know, he has, you know, a great skill set, a lot of talent. But yeah, the 49ers, they've got a lot of people they're going to have to try to worry about re-signing and protecting way before Chase Young.
Well, guys, we are out of time for this week. And as we get back to next week, we probably will already have our first or second big free agent signing. So a little more free agency and draft next week. And then we're really going to start digging deep into the draft in the weeks leading up after that. But we want to thank you all for being with us each week. We hope you're enjoying the podcast so far. And next week, maybe we'll even do our own mock free agency draft where we start to put some of these players with some teams. It's all for you at the Pro Football Weekly Hub, Pro Football Weekly TV podcast. And we look forward to visiting with you again next week.